If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tasteofchicago.com to order today.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. This is a holiday tradition, or an annual tradition anyway, where we have renowned veterinarian Dr. Mark Goldstein on. He's done it all in veterinary medicine, and he is going to take out his crystal ball and tell us what he thinks will be hot and to look for in 2025. So there I was, just looking through my email, and I saw an invitation from Larry Holm, an invitation to appear on a podcast. Now, I've done dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of podcasts as a guest, and I love it. I'm happy to do it. But Larry's was a little different. The invitation was he wanted me to talk about pet loss. I thought, okay, I know about this topic. I'm happy to do it. So I go into the studio downtown in Chicago, and it was one of the best interview experiences ever. Larry Holm is a pro. So I thought, you know what? Let's talk about pet loss, and let's talk about grief, and let's have Larry on the pet show. So, Larry, welcome to WGN.
It's great to be with you on WGN.
Well, yeah, from the guy who was in the national. You were on nationally with NBC, right?
Well, not on TV, but in the production realm, yes.
Right.
But not on TV, no.
And now you do the What About Grief podcast, and we'll tell people how to find that podcast in a little bit. Tell me how you came to do this podcast.
Yes, thanks for that question. So I started a podcast last year because I lost my wife, Sarah, to stage 4 uterine cancer in 2021. And she fought for 21 months, her cancer, and unfortunately passed away in July of 2021. And a friend after the funeral told me about a place called Grief Share. And they're a nationwide organization, and they have classes all over the country. And they're about 13 weeks, and you just type in your zip code, and they'll give you a list of classes near where you live. So I signed up for these 13 weeks of classes. I got to say, the first time I was about to go into the meeting, 50% of my brain was like, don't do it, get out, run. And 50% was, you got to do it. You know, you need to understand this grief that you're experiencing. And so I went in. And they're 1-hour classes, and you watch a video on grief, and it's a different topic each week, and you hear from professionals and people who have lost loved ones discussing their grief, and then you break off into a small group and with, you know, a few other people, and you talk about that topic. And, you know, I started to think, you know, people really don't know how to talk about grief, and a lot of people didn't know how to approach me and ask me questions about my grief after losing Sarah. And then here I am working with NBC Sports, and I'm thinking, I bet there's a lot of athletes maybe I could reach out to who have lost someone. And maybe they, you know, maybe this could be my platform of talking about grief and kind of marrying my profession of sports television together. And so I started last year a podcast. I had no clue how to do it. I read up on it. I knew technically there was no way I could put this on my laptop and figure it out. So I go to a professional studio that, you know, you went to. And I got some logo artwork done by a great company here in Chicago called Ted Studios. And I found a great producer who I worked with to help me. And
yeah, she used to produce Oprah. So I'm talking to this producer who's
Marcia Anderson.
Yeah. And I said, oh, well, it's nice to meet you. And we were just chit-chatting. And
yep.
I used to produce the Oprah Winfrey Show. That's not bad, Larry.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm so thankful she came on board, and she's the best, and she makes me, you know, sound like I know what I'm saying, but she's awesome. And so we just started doing a monthly podcast about grief and the various topics, and so many people would come up to me or email me and say, we got to do a podcast about, you know, the loss of a pet because they're family members and they're living, breathing, you know, beings, and they're important in our life. And, I, you know, they had such heavy hearts. And so I had listened to your Pet World show on WGN Radio, and I'm like, I got to call Steve or email Steve and see if he'll do it. And it's out now, and it's getting some great response.
Yeah, and once again, we'll tell people how to get there in a moment. Why did you think, oh, yes, they're family members and all of that? You don't have a pet, so why did you? Yeah, which, by the way,
I feel guilty about talking to you about that.
Well, we can rectify this issue.
But you can. I'll have about three dogs when this is over.
I'm okay with that. And three cats, too.
And three cats.
Yeah. Yes. So why did you think, aside from, yes, they're family members, they're important to people, did you have an experience with someone, anyone that you knew who had lost a pet, and you thought, wow, this grief is more profound than I ever would have thought?
Well, first of all, I do love cats and dogs, so I'm not against owning one. I love being around cats and dogs. But a friend of mine in California, he said he had lost his dog about a year ago. And he's like, and I think, you know, he had that dog for 15 plus years. And he's like, I lost my best friend. And it really just kind of stuck with me and struck me about that. And you know, grief not only is human loss, so, and that's probably the number one way we experience grief, because we'll always know somebody who passes, unfortunately. But you know, you can obviously, you know, grieve the loss of a pet, a job, losing a house, maybe a divorce. You know, there's so many areas of grief, but I just never really thought much about pet loss because I didn't have one, and I didn't know the depths of that love until people started talking to me about it and saying, you got to do it, and my friend saying that he's just so sad about, you know, the loss of his dog.
You have a large listenership. Did you hear from listeners that said, this is a topic that I wish you would cover?
Yeah, that's why I did it. You know, between my friend and some people who had emailed me to the podcast or people who are the, you know, friends of mine or coworkers, you know, they had mentioned it. And so Marcia and I, you know, we kind of researched it and read articles and watched some videos and stuff like that. And you know, like I said, I told her you were the guy that I wanted to interview about it. And so it's an important topic, and I'm glad we did it, and I would totally do it again.
Well, we're going to do it again in a sense when we come back here on WGN. The name of the podcast is What About Grief? And we'll talk about this again, but very quickly, how can people find you?
Yeah, so if they just type in What About Grief on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever they get their podcasts, or my name, Larry Holm, H-O-L-M, either one of those, you type into Apple, and it'll come up, and we're in our second season. We're monthly, unfortunately. We don't do it weekly or biweekly. We're just monthly right now, but and we cover a lot of different topics. But yeah, What About Grief on Apple Podcasts.
Okay. And we'll talk about pets and specifically what you might have learned, what you might have been surprised about that I said, Larry. And we'll do that when we come back on WGN. Larry Holm from the podcast, What About Grief? Larry, we had this conversation on your podcast about pet loss. Is there anything that I said or that we talked about, and it was a conversation, and you're really good at that, that might have surprised you?
A couple things that not surprised me, but has stuck in my mind. One was just, you know, I think animals really show their grief. And, you know, we talked about how elephants kind of surround the loss of another elephant and wave their, you know, their tusks or what have you in all around and smell the elephant that has passed away, or just how other animals in the wild grieve. How you talked about how when when one of your dogs passed away, you had somebody, I think, come over and you had all your other dogs there to witness that. And I thought that was really impactful to me. And so I think some people just think, they're just pets, you know, but really understanding the love that these animals give us, the unconditional love. I know we spoke a little bit about that, but I think people really grieve their pets like they would grieve a human. And some people grieve these pets more than some of their friends or family members who have passed away. And so, I just thought that was really, really interesting. Those were some of the big takeaways from me.
Yeah, a lot there to talk about. So,
yeah,
one thing is that we don't know. I'm a believer that if you are about to euthanize a family pet, and there are other pets, and I'm mostly talking dogs and cats here, or pet mm-hmm. parrots for that matter.
Yeah, the parrot story you gave was great.
Yeah, I mean, pet parrots. You guys who have a parrot, you know how smart those birds are, right? And how perceptive they are. And how quickly they, like dogs and cats, are able to pick up on our feelings. But if you have more than one pet, I do believe if it's possible to have the other pets witness, and we don't know what they know, but mm-hmm. they know stuff. We don't know what they know, but they know something is going on. And therefore, so if you're taking your dog into the veterinarian to be euthanized and you have two dogs, I say take the other dog with you rather than just coming home without that other dog. Now, some dogs, you can come home without that other dog and it'll be like every day that was the day before. I mean, you don't see a response. But other dogs will have a response. And it's like, where was my buddy? You know, mm-hmm. where did my buddy go? And they'll look for that other dog for days, you know? So I do think that it's the right thing to do for them, if it's at all possible.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing you brought up is that we sometimes grieve more for our pets. And if you think about it, we share stuff sometimes with our pets that we might not even share with our significant other. Mm-hmm. We may spend more time with our pets than we do with our significant other. So if you're a stay-at-home mom, is one example. The dog's with you all day, every day.
Yeah.
And there are so many examples where just the time spent with that animal, and it's quality time often, is more than other members of the household. And the relationship, which is hard to define, but that human-animal bond is incredibly intense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably years that you've had with that dog or that cat. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that oftentimes, and I don't think it's wrong, that people may grieve more for the loss of a pet than, say, the loss of a brother or a sister who you don't see all that often, or even if you do see them often. Do you know, does that make sense to you? And you become kind of an expert in this whole topic of grief.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I'm an expert. I'm definitely dealing with it and understanding it. I think one of the other stories that really stood out was about that trucker who had I think it was a cat.
Yeah.
And, he lost the cat and he called into your show and he's like, I lost my cat. And you're like, oh, I'm sorry. Was it recent? And he's like, no, it was a year or two ago. And he felt guilty moving on from that cat. And I think a lot of humans feel guilty too. And that's what grief does. You know, grief is about moving forward, but never forgetting. And you learn to live with grief and move forward with it. I thought it was just, he felt so guilty that, you know, do I get another cat? And will I forget about that previous cat? And I just think those emotions are so raw and true and so relatable to us as well who lose a loved one.
Yeah. And that previous cat was actually 12 years prior or so. And, and all those years, you know, it's 12 years. And still,
yeah, that's a long time.
I don't know that I'm ready to get another pet. And I pictured, I don't know what the truck driver looked like. How could I? Yeah. But I pictured he was this big, brawny guy, and he did the honking of the horn that I had him do. And, you know, and he said, I don't know if I'm ready. I mean, this big man, with he had a big voice anyway, saying, I don't know that I'm ready, you know? And it is hard. I wonder, before we go here, if it has helped you, if this podcast that you host has in any way been cathartic.
It has. It really has. The classes were helpful. But, you know, speaking about grief and grief around the holidays or the guilt or the regret you have in dealing with, you know, the person who is gone or the loneliness, you know, there's just so many emotions and moods that grief grief is associated with, and it can ambush you at any time. And I'm sure it does as a pet owner. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you think about a specific animal that you have lost at certain times, and it can just wear you down. It can go away quickly, or it can hang with you the rest of the day. But grief, I think the best way to describe grief is a quote I saw is that grief is just love with no place to go. And, and it's that love for that person or that animal, you know, and you want to give them love and you want to continue that love. And it's in a new relationship. You know, my relationship with Sarah, physically, she's not here, but, you know, I have a new relationship with her and I'm learning about that. And I think that might be the same way with pets as well. And so, just be open and honest and don't go through it alone. You know, don't go through grief alone. Find an outlet, find some people, find a podcast, what have you. But deal with your grief.
Well, you found a podcast that happens to be yours. What about grief? Where can people again find the podcast?
You can, again, just go to Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts and just type in What About Grief and it'll pop up. Or you can email me if you have questions or topics that you would want to discuss or guess at whataboutgriefpod@gmail.com.
Perfect. Larry Holm, thank you for the opportunity that you gave me to speak on your podcast. Really well done. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, and I appreciate you spending time on my podcast. It really has helped a lot of people, so thank you.
Thank you. It's crazy to think this, that breed-specific bans could ever come back. I'm talking about communities saying, no Rottweilers, no Dobermans, and always on the list are dogs that are called pit bulls. I say are called pit bulls because they're not really, I don't even know what that means, because genetically testing these dogs with broad shoulders and big heads, Susan Russell, I think, had a great idea when she was in charge of animal care and control in this city, in Chicago, and called them Chicago dogs to try to market them in a very positive way. But they're just dogs. They're mixed breed dogs. And maybe, maybe not. There's some pit bull in them. Typically not, actually. They just have a certain look about them. And it's that look, that profiling, that some say are a problem, but there's no data to support that dogs that look a certain way are any more of a problem. I mean, that's absolutely absurd. And we'll talk about that next week with Drayton Michaels on WGN. Dr. Mark Goldstein is one of the most prominent veterinarians and a veterinarian who, shall I say, Dr. Goldstein has been around a while, has seen it all. Is that
dinosaur?
is that safe to say? So people know, and some I've, and what we want to talk about is, all right, we're hard to believe, 2025. And I made you a promise. I've kept that promise, right? Every year you are here, we've done this. And why wouldn't you be here? We'll get to that too. But I want to talk about veterinary medicine and your resolutions. I almost said revolutions. Your resolutions for 2025. What would you like to see? Now, here's something interesting. AI, artificial intelligence. The profession, in my opinion, and we'll hear yours in a moment, has been generally slow to accept newer stuff. One place the profession wasn't is an initiative called Fear Free, which we can talk about in a moment. But AI has been embraced by the profession, by veterinarians, both for diagnostics and for use
in dealing with clients, such as telephone systems that have AI, etc. What do you think? Where are we going with all that?
Well, the best way I can answer that, Steve, is personal experience. And, you know, we're in the studio here. Chris, my wife, is sitting next to me. We both experienced this. I a few weeks ago with one letter. But here's what we did. The other night I said, Chris, let's put this picture. We had a picture of a bear sleeping on a tree. And
a
I put
what?
It into a bear. Like a grizzly. As a grizzly bear.
Like in front of your house?
No. A picture of it.
Oh, okay.
A friend had taken it just then. Excuse me. I just dropped my mic here. We took the picture of the bear. We put it into, in this case, Gemini, which is Google's AI, and asked it to write a story. Less than 10 seconds later, it came back with a short story that was about two or three pages long. He was sleeping. He heard hikers. The hikers were getting near him. All he did was show him a picture of a bear.
Huh.
It was stunning to see. The other was a very difficult letter for me to write. And I gave the information into, and we timed it this time. 9.5 seconds, came back with a four-paragraph perfect letter. So look at veterinary medicine. Wow, what a tool. But like so many things, Steve, whether it's a car, whether it's technology, whether it's a gun, they can be used for good reasons. They can be used for bad reasons. I bristle when I hear people say, well, we don't need that. You know, I love my Teslas, you know, and I love it not because I'm a car freak. I like technology, but I also see a future because one of the hardest things I had to do was take the keys away from my dad.
Mm.
Stop driving.
Yeah.
Once autonomous driving truly becomes mainstream, which it's not yet, it's going to give freedom back to our whole population. For veterinarians, with the knowledge that comes now towards us, and this is the challenge, because I heard you speaking earlier today, or ways back, it's not today, but ways back, I remember one of your shows, where you were talking about, you know, people and their kids and putting down the cell phone and put it aside part of the day. The challenge for parents, and thank heavens I'm a grandparent, I just have fun with them now, is how do we have our kids appreciate the simple things in life, smelling a flower, a sunny day, at the same time have them be competitive with kids around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we take those phones away, or I hear parents, I'm not giving them a cell phone till they're 15 years old. No, we have to teach them how to use the cell phone when they're still malleable, when they're young.
And the analogy
and use it
is
properly. For the veterinarian, it's don't use it. I'm going to go back to a large animal vet doc that I had when I was at Cornell, and he said, don't treat the paperwork, treat the patient. I myself had an experience where it was misread by a radiologist, an x-ray of my chest.
Mm-hmm.
But the primary clinician who knew the patient said, wait a second, that does not match with the animal, or the person in this case. I am an animal.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is it's a tool. It's not the end result. People have come to see you and your skills put together with your impressions of looking at the patient. Use AI to then go out and find that amazing amount of information that's out there so you can get the right treatment for the animal. And I think they should use it.
You do. So do you think this is, for lack of a better word, really revolutionary? So for cancer treatments, as one example, there are AI tools for veterinarians to use. There are AI tools to use when you call the clinic and the person who already is there answering the phones is busy. But instead of getting a busy signal, the client gets a text, actually, from a brilliant person. But it's not a person. It's AI saying, "Hi!" But they have access to the records. Say, how can I help you? We know you need to visit in 3 weeks, or we know you're going to visit in 3 weeks. Is this about confirming the appointment, canceling the appointment? They even know in a text to say, bring in the stool sample or whatever it is that's needed. How smart is that?
It's real smart. But I still think the world is built on personal relationships.
Mm-hmm.
They really are. Because at least I'm not aware of how AI incorporates emotion. So
they do. So on that telephone thing, they can tell. It's crazy. They can tell whether the client is upset or happy and respond appropriately.
Now I'm learning something.
But I was amazed.
I mean, amazed.
How can AI do that?
Well,
I don't know.
And
people sometimes can't do that.
But see, there's still something missing from this whole formula, and that's the nonverbal communication, because that's not coming through the phone. And as veterinarians, I joke about it. we are very good at nonverbal communication. Because if we weren't, you don't retire with 10 fingers left on your hand. You know, we watch the ears go down or up. We're going to get into fear free. We watch the hair go up or down. You know, when a person's on the phone, when I'm really upset, when I have to answer a phone, I can sound like this and sound very fine. But if you looked at me, my eyes are red. I've been crying. That phone's not going to pick that up. Now, to give people an example, wait a second. So he's dissing it. No. An example where AI is terrific is when you take a CAT scan, if people don't realize it, those are hundreds of pictures, slices of your body taken and put in a picture by that machine.
Mm-hmm.
A person can only look at so many distinctive features. A machine, a computer, can look at thousands more, process it in milliseconds. So in other words, that little tiny tumor that would have been missed on the fourth section of 200 pictures gets picked up by the computer. It's then told to the doctor. Now, what? How you deal with it, you have to have that personal relationship, I feel. You need to be in a veterinary medicine, talking to the client and watching the patient. In human medicine, looking at the patient and talking to the family. So I'm learning now that emotion can be there, but I still don't know how the nonverbal communication comes across. But it's something we need to do, again, if we want to remain just competitive and keep up with doing the best we can.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's happening is more telehealth than ever before. However, should there be guardrails? Do you need that veterinary client-patient relationship?
Yes. And we've talked about this before.
Right. Explain what that is.
Well, first, I'm going to give you credit, Steve, because you were really bringing that to the forefront and getting a lot of pushback, I know, initially from people like myself, even.
Mm-hmm.
And now, as it has progressed, I can see how it helps once you've had a diagnosis, certainly. But in the process of making the diagnosis, telehealth can only go so far. I think we use a situation of a blocked cat, you know, urinary blockage.
Yes.
And, you know, they call and they say, my cat is not feeling comfortable. Well, why don't we do this, this, and this? And lo and behold, what they don't realize is the bladder is rock hard.
And if the cat were blocked, that could be a death sentence.
That's a
without
death sentence.
Immediate. So the example was you called a telehealth person who really doesn't know you, doesn't know your cat. Now, if you have a veterinary client-patient relationship, different story. They know you. They've seen you. But there are third-party or direct-to-consumer providers out there that they go directly to. You have no previous experience. You're getting a professional at the other end of the phone who probably isn't in your state and might not even be in the United States, actually. So you say, it depends on how the client describes it, but you say, oh, my cat is struggling in the litter box. Well, that could be an emergency, but if that person doesn't know you or doesn't read the situation correctly, your cat is in big trouble.
But you also touched on something else. Once you have that relationship, there's trust.
Yes.
Okay, and you can't build trust without experience and without, you know, some episode which shows you that. It's funny. We both realize we've heard people, why'd you become a veterinarian instead of they'll say real doctor.
Yeah.
Why didn't you become, yeah, I bristle. Why didn't you become a veterinarian instead of a physician? And unfortunately, I will say, some veterinarians answer it by saying, because I like animals more than people.
Oh,
Don't go into veterinary medicine. Really.
All right, we'll talk about that when we come back. We're talking with Dr. Mark Goldstein. And one pearl for 2025 in veterinary medicine. What will that be? We also promised to talk about fear-free. We'll do that as well. Talking with Dr. Mark Goldstein here about everything for next year, what we're ready for our pets. And it includes fear-free. So when you and I first started talking about this initiative to help pets feel more comfortable or even enjoy the idea of a veterinary visit or getting there in the first place, right? We were talking about it. Great idea. Did you ever think that two things would happen? That the entire profession would jump on board with this in a great way, and that clients would say the emotional well-being of my animal. It's important to me that my animal, dog or cat or any pet, is, if not happy, at least content with the veterinary visit.
I didn't expect it to take on as quick as it did. And obviously, the credit goes to not only what it's about, but the man behind it.
And
we
Dr.
both
Becker.
Admire Dr. Marty Becker
sure.
And all, his family and the people around him. You know, that's why Fear Free has certainly been on the forefront in people's faces. And what they realized is, wow, it works. I had personal experience. Took my daughter for my daughter. We went for a walk, my daughter and I. I almost said I took her for a walk.
How old is your daughter?
No, with a leash. She's on a leash. No.
No.
We walked down the street, and the first fear-free hospital that was accredited in San Diego County, where I live, was right down the street. Mm. Walked in, had not called ahead, thought we'd just stop in and see it and say hi. Walked in the door. The clinicians were busy, and they had me wait in the lobby. I watched, I still will remember, two Weimaraners. Door opens. They don't get pulled in like you see so often. They come bolting in the door. Wow, we're at the vets. I mean, yeah. It was palpable. It was palpable. The person in reception behind the desk comes out around the desk with treats, sits down at their eye level. All of these things are what reduce fear and anxiety and stress, FAS as we call it,
yeah,
to an animal. From the time they walk in the front door, you know, the stainless steel table now has a yoga mat on it so they don't slip and try to catch their footing. Alcohol has been replaced by peroxide because, folks, the most important sense for animals is their sense of smell.
Right.
So when you're walking them, by the way, and they keep smelling and you go, come on, come on, come on, you realize that if you pull them from away from that, it's like taking a child for a walk and putting blinders over their eyes. That's how they see the world, through their nose.
Yep. Yeah.
So alcohol makes them nose blind because that's what you're rubbing on the skin to maybe give a shot. Suddenly, it would be like you again being in a doctor's office and somebody puts covers over your eyes. These things are being replaced. And more quickly, in a profession which you even said can be very conservative, which is good too. They don't get into fads. They're not easy to pick. We're not as a profession. And I think that's also what has allowed us to maintain a trust with people. Because if you Google physicians and veterinarians right now, you will find that the first hit says people think physicians are arrogant, money hungry, and all kinds of negativities. Veterinarians, trustworthy, nice, caring. Okay, I love my physicians too, so that was not my opinion. But I think we've gained it by being both conservative and caring. And FAS is a way to show it because we are consciously saying, hey, this isn't just about getting the job done. Whereas human medicine used to be quality of care one, and then how long the procedure took or what was the profit margin two. That's been reversed. Fear-free in veterinary medicine says, wait a second, the patient is the focus. That's why we're here. And that also then bleeds over to the people. Mm-hmm. Because if the animal gets upset and the person really loves their animal, they get upset. And now you have these things called pheromones floating all around the air of anger and upset and sorrow. And we clean out the room, and then we bring a new puppy into the room. And he gets all those pheromones and goes, holy mother, I don't want to be here. Yeah. I don't know why, but it doesn't smell right.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've kind of reversed all of that. And, you know, we were going to talk about what's my wish for next year.
Yeah.
It's actually that fear-free be incorporated, sort of like expected on all our parts. Clients should expect it. Veterinarians should, you know, practice that. When they've got an animal that needs their nails clipped, if you're going someplace where four people are sitting on that animal just to be able to clip his nails, there's other ways to do it. You
go
put peanut
else.
Butter on the wall. Let them lick the peanut butter off the wall.
Literally.
A high value treat. While they're doing that, you're clipping the nails. You know, there are folks, I have relatives, I won't name them, I'll get in trouble, who say, you don't have to give a treat to a dog every time he does something. Why do you do that? Wait a second. If I asked you to come running across the room and then sit down in front of me, you want something in return. Why can't they get a treat?
Because I know you, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but you're right. If you give me $100 every time I do that, I'll do it a lot.
Yeah, sure will. So, yeah. Folks, yes, don't let them get fat. Make sure you incorporate how much you're treating them with throughout the day into how much they need to eat at their meals. But it's I want people to make that almost a mainstream thing. When you see someone with a choker collar or an electronic collar, that initially, you immediately go, wait a second, there's a better way to do this stuff.
And is there?
Absolutely. If it wasn't, we wouldn't be able to know what we do about orcas and dolphins and animals that are much bigger than us, and elephants. You don't go up to an elephant. Well, I did once, and I learned a lesson. I got thrown 30 feet.
I wish we had time to tell that story. We don't. What is the name of your book, Dr. Goldstein?
Thank you, Steve. Lions and Tigers and Hamsters. But I will tell you, it's going out of print on Amazon now.
What?
Because it sold about 12,000 copies. We had 3,000 left over. By the end of the year, I'll get you the information on how people who want the book can get it otherwise.
And what's your home address?
We'll send that's what it's going to be. It's not going to be my home address, but yeah, it'll be writing to me. Because I will tell you, real quick, when you write a book like that, Marty Becker, in fact, was the one that told me, when it's on a book, you know, you go into a store and you see it on the shelf, have someone take a picture, which I did, because you, it's like you've birthed a baby. It was 2.5 years of work.
Yeah.
So here comes 5 years. It's got a great run. I've had a lot of fun doing it. I continue to use it as a way of talking to people about animals. Well, and they tell you there's some in the Simon & Schuster has them in a warehouse, but, you know, Dr. Mark, you can buy some at a discounted rate. What happens to the rest, I asked? They get pulped.
They get what?
Pulped. Oh. Turned into sawdust.
Oh, no.
We own them all. We bought them all.
Good.
Nobody's
good.
Pulping my baby.
Good.
So before the end of the year, we'll get you information. I hope you'll let people know.
Right. And you know, clearly, he doesn't believe in child abuse either. Dr. Mark Goldstein, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, folks, and happy holidays.
Check it out at WGNradio.com. If you missed one of these shows, you can always hear the archive of the interview under the Pet Show, Steve Dale's Pet World. But I have more. The Petcast. It's a podcast. So look under podcast. That's at the very top when you go to WGNradio.com and look for Steve Dale's Petcast. And you will hear Dr. Ernie Ward talk about pet obesity in a very different way than what you have heard before. And also just dropped, as we say in the profession, Dr. Renee Schmidt of the Pet Poison Helpline talks about safety for your pets over the holidays. Some things you might not have thought about. For example, not only are lilies dangerous to cats, even if the cat touches the paw in the water that the lily is in, then licks the paw, that could be really a big problem. All of that on the Petcast at WGNradio.com. Talk to you bright and early next week.